yeah. you too. All right. Here we are. Yo, yo, everybody, on another episode of the Mind Body Marathon.
Hello.
And on today's show, it's yours, Dr. Leo, yours truly. And then we have Dr. Matt.
Hello.
And old Zaccaroni.
It's been a minute.
Yes. This is my first time in the new studio.
Yeah, the new studio. Yeah, it took forever to get the studio painted and
it looks
set
the
up.
Same.
Yeah. it looks literally the same.
You guys probably have it's no just, idea.
It's just mainly like that we just needed to move the room. That's all it was.
Well, like always, I'm going to blame it on Jared.
Yeah.
He took his good old time.
But yeah, like we don't, what do we have on the agenda today?
I think we're just
kind of riffing it.
Yeah.
Matt, so you kind of had mentioned you wanted to talk a little bit about indoor and why was that? Indoor
so,
track.
Well, right now we're in the thick of it. Well, so I am going to be treating at US
there
Indoor
you
Champs,
go.
So
what's that date?
I believe on the 24th or 5th, I believe. 25th. Nice. So I'll be there till the 1st of March and then
come home. Okay. We'll be gone at the same time. I'll be in Cancun.
Yeah. We'll be doing completely
what are you doing
different
there?
Things.
Joelle turns 18. So we're going to do Cancun things.
Oh
and,
my gosh.
Yeah, so.
Hey, I just remembered I still have Mariah's Christmas present, but I needed chapstick, so I stole one.
You stole her chapstick.
I stole one. She's got three more.
Mariah is obsessed. My little daughter, 4, she's obsessed with collecting
chapsticks. But she
and
likes strawberry. That's her favorite, though, right?
Sure.
I thought she said that her favorite was strawberry.
I think it's just because it was pink.
Oh, well, I got her strawberry. It's organic, too. So.
Oh, well, we love that.
Yeah.
Schnauzberries.
Yeah, a lot has changed since we've been on the show. I mean, since we've done like regular shows, we've done, you know, I did about 2 months worth of kind of solo acts and traveling and had Jared on for a show or two and just could never get us to all connect.
Yeah. We've just been busy.
Yeah. But a lot has changed. I got another kid.
Yeah.
It does. I adopted or am in the process of adopting my first cousin once removed. A little 5-year-old Tommy. Have you guys even met Tommy?
No,
yet?
I can't wait to meet him.
Yeah. Can't wait to give him a noogie.
He's a ball of energy, isn't he?
He is, dude. He is. We were at Sky Zone this past weekend, and I'm just so bad, dude. I'm so bad. Like, I took Mariah, two of her cousins, and then Tommy. So there's 4 kids, 4, 5, 6, and 8. And somehow thought that it was smart to convince them all to go into the main dodgeball court.
It's a brilliant idea.
And like,
humble those kids.
Tommy just like, he was getting picked off like crazy. Just didn't understand the concept of getting out. And then he got injured and then Weston got injured. And I'm like, all right, let's just move on. Like it's past time. So then we kind of keep going. And about an hour later, I'm like, let's go back into dodgeball. Not even 5 minutes later, poor little Tommy like wrenches his knee and is limping around. And Weston, like 1 minute later, gets blasted in the face from like this 18-year-old kid. And his like eye was all bloodshot. And the kid like came out of the game specifically to like make sure Weston was okay.
Dude, he's been taking him to the noggin for so long.
I know. Like we played tennis, the ping pong, and I hit him square in the forehead. It was like a Three Stooges scene.
Dude, but he was asking for it though. He was talking crap.
He better not play any contact sports in high school. He's already halfway like being disqualified for participating.
Just everything just goes right after his head. And he was like trying to hold back tears to be a tough guy. And this kid was like, dude, I hit him so hard. I felt so bad. But then I'm like, if I freaking take this kid, this little kid I adopted, if I take him to Sky Zone within like a month of having him and break his leg, that's the worst parent ever. And I got to pump the brakes with this kid because he is all energy. Like last night, I was like, dude, go downstairs, like rush downstairs, like take this to your room real quick. And then he's rushing downstairs in here. He just falls down the stairs.
Dude,
he just slides on the steps. I'm like, you got to watch out.
Your story, either this, like early this week or last week, when you said, like Tommy and Mariah, like if they got all their stuff done, they could, or like you guys would wrestle.
Yeah.
And he got real excited and then punched you.
Oh, punched me square in the chagangas. And I don't know why he goes after that, dude.
Because he's probably at the height of.
But it's funny though, because we were talking to his Nana. So my uncle was taking care of him, and then my uncle's girlfriend was his Nana. So he called him Papa and Nana. And so they started him in a year young at elementary school. And we were talking to her last night, and she's like, does he punch kids like in his new school? And we're like, no, he doesn't really have any issues like that. She's like, yeah, he would like literally punch kids every day. I think he was just like,
just riled up,
just beating kids up in the wrong areas. And he knew the sweet spot. And he just comes into our house and he just starts swinging hard right at the wrong areas.
Did he watch too many Three Ninjas? Yeah. The puffy doll that would light up when you hit him in the sweet spots.
Oh my god, that is such a weird reference, but it's so true.
I have watched that movie 1,000 times.
You wished you were them so bad.
100%. It's still to this day one of my biggest regrets is not learning how to do flips.
How many movies came out from that series?
Four.
Yeah. And we've only seen the first one.
I've seen.
Well, you see, but for Wine and Jamie Night.
Yeah, I don't think we watched the second one. Yeah, I don't think we went to the second one, which I think is just as good as the first one because they're in Japan.
Oh,
and they got a whole new mecca. Well, they had, so the original three brothers, the guy who played the oldest, which is Rocky, only was in that first movie, I believe. And then
he just got too big and peaced out.
I don't know. I just think he didn't actually want to act anymore. So they found a different Rocky for the other ones. But the guy who played the middle one, Colt, has been in all four.
So that is the weirdest trivia I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Wow. Zach, you were giving me some weird trivia before this show started.
Oh yeah. I'm reading a crazy book right now. Or sorry, I'm listening to a book. Yeah, right now.
You gotta clarify because can't act all like smart and stuff.
But I am reading a book that I got for my birthday that it's taken me this long. So my birthday's in September and it's taken me this long to finish it.
Yeah. Can I just say like I too am very ADHD with reading.
Yeah.
Like next to my bed, this is probably one of the more annoying things that I do for my wife. I probably have like 12 to 15 books stacked next to my bed. And I just, whatever I feel interested in, I just read. And I don't start front to back. Like I don't like reading like that. Like I'll open
do you
a
do
page.
Back to front?
No, I just open to a page. And just whatever, if I'm interested, I'll start reading. If I'm not, I just flip to a different page.
Yeah, I'm a lot like that.
Obviously, I can't do that with stories, but like with,
right.
You know.
Like, I'm somebody who likes to read like obviously things that like that interest me, like running books. So like Running with the Buffaloes is like a big one that I got really into back in the day. And then like just other things about history, but I never really got into like fiction books. And I really want to get into it because I feel like it opens up a creative part of your brain.
Whoa, that's such a great idea. I do agree with that. Like, I think, so now I'm just mainly reading the Bible and stuff at night, and a book called The Utmost for the Highest, which is like devotional prayers and stuff. That's mainly what I've been doing. But I do agree with that. Like I like reading fiction before bed because it does make the dreams better. Oh,
well, I'm reading Project Hail Mary. So that's like the physical book that I'm reading and they're going to make it into a movie. So it's Andy Weir. So he wrote The Martian, which became the movie.
Yeah.
And then this one's going to be a movie and I'm like trying to get it done before. Like, I don't know when the movie, I think it comes out in spring, but I'm like, I got like 150 pages left. And I'm just like,
what is it about?
It's basically like this energy source that is consuming the sun and they're trying to find a way to like combat it. So it's like an end of humanity type book. And like, yeah, it's really neat. I don't want to go too much in detail because I think it's going to be a really good movie. And the book's like, it's really good.
So what's it called again?
Project Hail Mary.
Project Hail Mary.
It's a really good book. People
are going to think that's like some like college football game or something like that.
And like, I'm someone who can't get into books like that, but this one, like his writing is just so, so good. It's so good. But the book that I'm listening to is called Blitzed. And it's basically a book about how there was extreme meth use in the German army when Hitler was in power.
Now they didn't use meth or any of those kind of things in World War One, correct? It was just
regime. So like the book kind of starts out with like an historical overview of like how meth became. And so it was actually produced in like the late 1800s. And obviously people loved it. And then like there were some doctors that were concerned and saw bad side effects, and so it was like prescription only. And then as I don't think it, like, they didn't really talk about in the book it being prevalent in World War One, but then as Hitler started to become or gaining more power, he wanted more of a pure society. So like banning alcohol, banning drugs, whatever. And part of the reason why is because he had really bad health issues. So he had like bad GI issues. And then this like doctor who became like the celebrity doctor back then, and then ultimately became his personal doctor, started to inject him with vitamins.
Huh, he was getting infusions.
He was. It was like very like forward thinking. And then Germany at a point, as they were like in turmoil after World War One with all the sanctions and things that happened to them, started some of the pharmaceutical companies started to create this other type of meth called Pervitin, which was like a safer form. Like it had, like they claimed that it had no like side effects besides just the effects that you get from, like, you know, feeling.
What are the effects of meth? Like what does it even do to you? Because all I think of is just teeth.
Yeah. So like in terms of like bad or good.
If you don't like your teeth.
Yeah.
So in terms of like bad or good.
Both. Well, good. Like, why do people do it?
So what they talk about in the book is that it's basically like Adderall. So it's like you get shit done. So it helps you to stay focused. It helps you to work. It helps you to have a lot of energy. Like you can't fall asleep.
Yeah. Dude, I have, and so this is crazy. This is worth like slightly interrupting. We'll get back to your story. But the reason why I ask is, like, I don't think I've opened up at all on this podcast, but I was around a lot of drugs as a kid. Mm-hmm. And meth was one that I was not around a lot. And you as a kid, when you're growing up around drugs, you get very comfortable with understanding what somebody is on. Like you're like, oh, well, they're probably on heroin or they're on coke or cocaine or whatever. And you kind of just get an idea, like, cause there's distinct differences. There's like, you get like, you find like looks in their eyes and then paraphernalia around, and you kind of just follow the tracks. Right. I don't even know, like, this was one of the weirdest stories of my life, but I was probably in like fifth or sixth grade, somewhere in that time frame. And I was hanging out with a friend. So I lived at the time in South Akron, and we had just moved to East Akron. And I went back to South Akron to hang with one of my friends, and he was his stepdad. So I only knew his mom from when I was in South Akron, and his stepdad was like freaking crazy. So we go and stay at his stepdad's house, and he was like quite literally making bombs in his basement.
Oh my God.
Like he was absolutely crazy. And sometimes I just like, I'll meet people and I'm like, did these things actually happen to me? Because it's so crazy.
It's nuts.
But he was on meth, and it was a whole new thing I had not experienced. I was not around, and he would stay up all night, and I was there for like 2 or 3 days. And of course, this house was absolute mayhem. Like, we were shooting like paintball guns at cars on the highways and stuff. And like, just, I can't believe that I like survived my childhood.
You've come a long way.
But I do remember vividly in the middle of the summer, because it was like summer, he set off a small bomb on the railroad tracks.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
In Akron.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Like, it didn't like blow up a ton of stuff, but it literally was like, it was like, you know, it was like a pretty elaborate firework essentially. Yeah. And we all like ran off. Remember, they had helmets, and he's like, put on these helmets and stay in the front yard. And then he's like, you guys want to see what I'm working on? And he's like, he just had this look in his eyes. Like he, this dude was like wired to the core, with hadn't slept in days, was just like on a frenzy.
He was on a mission.
Dude. And he set off a freaking bomb on the railroad tracks. It was crazy.
So like a lot of this book is through, clinical notes through like some of the doctors and some of the generals, and they said like one of the things that meth did was it took away fear and it made you feel invincible, and it just gave you like this, they talked about it, just gave you this power of like no fear, just go in there. And so
it's like alcohol, but not, it's not a depressant.
Yeah until you're withdrawing from it. Then you're like irritable, you're okay, going crazy.
Wow. Do they go into detail about like the dosage that they would give like
soldiers?
The soldiers?
They do. So I'm actually kind of at that part now. So so one thing that they experimented with is they experimented it with like more of the logical side of it. So they did this test where they had a control group that wasn't on meth, and then they did another group where they were on meth, and they had them do math equations for 6 hours. And of course the control group, like, you know, tired after 3 hours, yeah, exhausted, and the meth group, like, just frenzy doing math equations. It's nuts. Yeah. But then they looked at their work and it was like all over the place. They weren't getting stuff right. So like, all right, we can't really use it for this. But then they realized that they could use it for like battle and soldiers.
So they were just trying to figure out like how to best, if these guys are crazy, how do we best use it?
Yeah. So then like
put them in tanks and send them on the front lines.
100%.
Well, that's what, like, chewing tobacco was originally given to soldiers to calm their heart rate and their blood pressure down so they could shoot more accurately.
Yeah. Well, that somebody was asking about this, and obviously this is Mind Body Marathon, but somebody was asking
from the hip with this right now. This is incredible.
Yeah, I was talking to a patient yesterday.
Everybody do math.
False. Do not do that. But yeah, I was talking with a patient yesterday, and they were like, we were talking about Shikari and how she got busted for Shikari Richardson. She got busted for speeding, and then Christian Coleman came to her aid.
Yeah,
and like, then he had drug paraphernalia.
Yeah, right? I think he had like a weed pipe.
Yeah. So then it came up the conversation, like, why is weed even banned with WADA and USATF and USADA? And I was like, oh, well, it's a performance enhancer. And he's like, how would it be a performance enhancer? And I'm like, well, if you're a jumper or pole vaulter and your world is precision, it calms your nerves. It doesn't do it for everybody, but if you dose it right, it could be a performance enhancer because it can allow you to lock in a little bit better. Like, if anybody has listened to music ever in their life, they pay.
Is it technically banned?
It is. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was banned up to a certain point.
Well,
like a certain point.
That I don't know, but this is why it's banned, is because you can't, it's a performance enhancer, right? It calms the nerves. I mean, like musicians and authors and writers. And I mean, yeah, that's a thing that you use it for. Well,
I'm gonna Jamie this.
And if you ban it for, like, if you have it like being like a performance enhancing drug for like a technical side of USA track and field or track and field in general, then you can't just be like, yeah, sprinters can use it, but throwers can or something. You know, you can't do that. So you just ban it indefinitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's banned in competition. Oh, prohibited only in competition.
Yeah, that's the point, right? In competition. So, the fact that he had it in his car was more of a legal issue, mm-hmm, because obviously the state of Florida, wherever they were, doesn't recognize it.
Right.
But, you know, it's a performance enhancer. I mean, it's the reason why Pink Floyd is so good. Like, you know, it allows you to be creative. Like, let's just be honest about it.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I mean, like in this book, I'm kind of getting to the point where it like worked until it didn't. It was like the excitement of it all, where it's like, you know, you try something new, you're like, man, I feel great. And then like long-term use, you realize that it's like detrimental, and you're getting to the point where like part of the reason why, cause it worked when they invaded Poland. So they said it like worked tremendously. So they just like they stuck to the script. And then basically everyone was addicted. No one was sleeping. They were all burnt out. They were all fatigued.
So you have a war that goes on for more than a couple of years. It's like,
They screwed
they just
themselves.
Had nothing left.
Yeah.
Well, plus you're not fighting. You're not thinking clearly.
Right.
You know, you're not strategic about it. Yes, you're just kind of a number because you're just thrown to the front forces, but you're not acting with emotion. Mm-hmm. You're not fighting for your country, fighting for a cause. You don't feel that same passion.
Right.
I don't know. It's obviously none of us have ever been in war, but I would imagine that that's what carries you through the hell of it all.
Right. Just being there with your team and
through
it. We've also never been on meth. We'd like to clarify.
Yeah. And thank God that they took it, because who knows what the world could be.
I know, right? Yeah. So fill me in, Zach, or Matt, what excites you most about indoor track here?
I just think, getting back to working with that high level of an athlete, you know, it's one of those things where working NACAC, there was probably 75% of the athletes being pro and 25% still being like just collegiate trying to make it into the pro circuit.
Yeah.
And this will be, I mean, there are going to be all the big names. And so it's going to be even more, locked in, you know, ready to go type of mentality for both the athletes and myself. So yeah, it's like a lot more stressful.
Where's the meet at?
So it's in New York City. I can't remember which stadium.
It's Breezeway.
It's Breezeway.
Yeah, yeah, it's the Staten Island one.
Yeah. So that's honestly probably 50% of my anxiety. I've never been in anywhere close to
you never New been York to the city? City?
No.
Dude, oh, you're about to get baptized by fire.
I am a country boy at heart. Oh. So me going to a city with, you know,
I love this
in any caliber is already giving me high anxiety. But I will commend USA Track and Field for the first time being on top of things and already getting my travel arrangements not 6 days before I leave.
Go team.
So that was awesome. But
yeah, so what do you guys think about the performances where we're at right now with track? I mean,
oh, it's crazy.
We got a 16-year-old that's the world lead right now. We got we got a bunch of depth on the US side.
So many world records being broken.
Yeah.
Or at least US records being broken. So
I talked to a kid earlier.
Double T's.
Yeah, I talked to a kid earlier that he ran at Beat Up last week and ran fast, and he's running at Valentine's next weekend, and he's like, dude, that track is so bouncy. It's so fast.
I think they're just great opportunity, great training. I'm so naive to the world right now because I've been out of it.
But one of my, you know, it's one of the things I think that's happening with trackflation, I think it's a combination of factors. I think the access to information is very high. Mm-hmm. Like people are aware of what works from a training perspective, like trade secrets, if you will. Secondarily, I think trade secrets of nutraceuticals like creatines, you know, bicarb, being the two main ones, I would say that have changed the industry of running over the last 2 years, in terms of like how you figure out how to run fast, essentially. And then we have the obvious advantage of shoes and track being different in terms of better. And then I think there's the other advantage that individuals like us, we keep people healthy.
That was what longer. I was going
to
say.
I mean, I think that's kind of a hidden variable where, you know, and then if you just think back to the 70s and 80s, and if somebody's knee went out, they just kind of just stopped.
Yeah. Or they either pushed through it or had to stop. I remember reading Frank Shorter's biography, and like he was diagnosed with a stress fracture, and his team doc was like, yeah, just keep running. And it's either going to break or your body's just going to like eventually heal.
That's
and
crazy.
one year it healed and the other one, it just broke in half. Like, and that was just the mentality like of it.
Yeah. So like, you know, doctors and the rehab of the internet have just gotten better about managing injuries and keeping people healthier and allowing them to train at decently high levels. Mm-hmm. And we can, you know, like I was just telling somebody today, there's a basketball kid from Britain. He came in and jacked up his knee pretty good. Got a torn meniscus, torn MCL, and like, you're good, dude. Like, just a couple weeks, should be back by conference. And he's like, what are you talking about? It's like, yeah, like we don't lose meniscus to surgeries anymore, man. Like, the world's different. We've got really good with rehab and really good with modalities, and just we know how to release the tissue in different ways now.
I mean, even the fact that like I didn't know this, but like Lindsey Vonn with a ruptured ACL, and she's going to go out there and try to give it her best. Like, I don't feel like that was a thing not that long ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you understand the mechanics of the joint and then what structures take over and what structures shut down. And it's a very predictable pattern. And then if you hack the system good enough, then you can, you know, even with the meniscus tear, people go, well, will it ever heal? No, it won't, but that's okay. Cause like in a situation like that, I often explain it's sort of like, it's like a hangnail. Like if you have a hangnail, it's a big old fat hangnail on your finger, it's not a big issue until you catch it on like your clothes or your pocket or something, and then it hurts. But if it's just out in space, it's not a big deal. It's kind of like the same thing with like the labrum of the hip or the meniscus of the knee. It's like, yeah, you can have a structure that's frankly torn, but if you don't apply aberrant or abnormal forces to that structure, then it just won't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, it's not the same as like a skin tear, like a cut on your skin or something.
I mean, my mind was blown when Arlen talked about his ACL.
Yeah.
And it like when I found out about it, I was like, wait, that doesn't compute in my head. But now it's like, Now we're kind of rewriting slowly what it's like to have an ACL tear. Mm-hmm. Like, he's kind of proof that you can keep going forward.
Yeah. And is it worth it if there's no issue?
Yeah.
Right. That's the question.
He's able to stabilize it enough. Like, you know, why would you shut down for 9 months, you know, of training?
Yeah. I mean, like, somebody like me who's loosey goosey and very unstable through the joints, like, I would have known very quickly if I had an ACL tear. Mm-hmm. But somebody like him, who's obviously done 100-mile races, mm-hmm. like hundreds of miles of races, it's kind of like, dude, you're just durable. Like, your joint capsule, your tendons, your ligaments, they're just durable. So they're, sure, you have an ACL tear, but like, everything else is jumping in to stabilize.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that you can kind of get away with that stuff like that.
How much of, like, just with our change of treatments over the years, like, have gotten to the point where we've gotten even better at, like, being able to allow these athletes to continue to train through injury at 90-95%.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, in a race this competitive with that amount of talent is a big deal. 5% is the difference between making it to a finals or not. But you just can keep them competing for a long enough time where they can run enough races where either the other athletes are having a bad day and they just keep consistent, or they have one day where they just get a little bit more of a, mm-hmm. you know, of a boost of things too.
Well,
like, especially sprinting. Like, obviously, yeah. you're not going to have that as much in a 10K guy who can't race, you know, every week or something. See, like that.
That's a good point. It's like, it's kind of like, so I'm working with this, like, really high end sprinter right now. Like, this, he's internationally ranked sprinter. And it's like, I mean, he's definitely got some irritation in his hips. Mm-hmm. And he just recently had his knee buckle and he just kind of had a setback with that. And it's like, dude, like, it's not like you're running a marathon where your volume of training has to be high. Mm-hmm. So you do actually in training have to be kind of firing on all cylinders. In the sprints, like, yeah, training matters, but you really do just need to get to the line healthy. Mm-hmm. And if you're sure, you might have some tears and some structures like labrums or like hamstring or something, but if you get to the line healthy by managing your workload with volume and training, you just need that window of 10 seconds to be efficient. Mm-hmm. And it is very manageable to control those forces. Now, optimally, if you have no injury, then you can train even harder and then there you go. But if you're just really gifted, just get to the line healthy. Mm-hmm. Like, now, which isn't the case in distance. Like, yes, we want to get everybody the line healthy, but, you know, in a sprint, they're more likely to injure themselves in races versus training. And in distance running, you're more likely to get injured in training versus races. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like you just, and the psychology is slightly different when you're treating both athletes.
And maybe it's like, what is the definition of healthy when it comes to an athlete like that? Because like you said, like, anytime that you're on the circuit and you're working, you know, there's somebody that has something going on, and yeah. it's like, can we manage that to get you to that 90 to 95% so you can go out there and give you, you know, what you yeah. need to give for that race? And I think that's like the beauty of being on the circuit. And that's one thing that I miss is like, when you get to that level and you see these athletes, and then you can bring that back and apply it to your, you know, your patient population, you go, no, like, you're going to be fine. Like, we don't need to take 6 months off for, you know, runner's knee or yeah. whatever, like, you know, yeah. I'm exaggerating, but it's like, you can use those experiences that you have working with these types of athletes and come back and reassure people like, yeah, you are going to have these things, but it's okay.
Dude, this is actually bringing up an interesting point. So like, this is kind of a way to think of it. And so I hope people listen to this whole episode so they can kind of arrive to this point. But if you, so you would never buy a car. So you buy a car, 2026 Toyota Corolla.
Yeah.
And in 2029, you need to get a new set of brakes. Would you walk around the house throwing a fit and a tantrum because the car needs new brakes? No, that's a setback that you expect in a piece of matter that is will literally break down with use. The people that understand that bodies are not perfect, and if you come out of your teenage years with no injury, you come out of your early 20s with no injury, and then you hit your mid 20s and that everything adds up and you start getting injuries, the athletes that age gracefully and continue to do well go, okay, that's fine. I expected to change my oil at some point. I expected to get a new set of tires. I expected to change my brakes. These are things you expect to do on matter that breaks down. And they just go, okay, yeah, that's an injury. You know, whatever. I got an Achilles strain, or I tore my hamstring, or I got a stress fracture. I mean, that's the risk of our sport. Sure, fine. You just deal with it. People will want it to always be perfect. And you don't expect that of anything, literally anything else ever in your life, mm-hmm. including your job, including your spouse, including your kids. Setbacks are expected. So why should you not expect them also in training? And you shouldn't throw fits when they happen and panic.
I feel like,
do you know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of like, all right, let's take a step back, figure out why this happened and get you back. It's not a big deal. Just rewrite. You know, I think it's, you and I know, like working with Clayton, it's like he had a lot of setbacks and we just kind of all, he never panicked.
Right.
He just, he just sat calmly on the table, 0% raise in blood pressure, and said, yeah, you know, this hurts. Let's deal with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, there's no way of statistically figuring this out, but I'd love to see, like, if they somehow could with AI or whatever, like, what is the actual percentage of people who go to, like, race day, like, having either a 100% perfect training plan or, like, feeling 100%,
oh,
like,
it's
a true
be,
100%.
It's got to be
like,
massive.
There's no way of actually, like, statistically figuring that out. But
I mean,
like,
think of all the people that come on like the table for the flushes at Akron Marathon. Yeah. And you're like, we're dealing with this now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, like, it's got to be 0.00, like 1% of people who have had like, they're like, yeah, this was the most perfect.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And that's then a you great wonder point.
Then, it's like, well, then did you push yourself hard enough to like, you should feel sore. It's like the track athletes that come in and they're like, I hate track. It's so hard. I'm like, it's track. It's supposed to suck.
Well, like, okay, I mean, you can play, Super Bowl is coming this weekend. Yeah. You can play a whole football game and not have any issues. Mm-hmm. Like, but in if you're running a marathon, it is a guarantee you will hurt. Mm-hmm. If you run an all-out 800, it is guaranteed you will be baptized by fire. It will absolutely hurt. You'll be dipped in acid. Now, that's our world, right? And, you know, when you write a training plan for somebody in terms of training, if they execute that 100%, you're actually probably overshooting it, mm-hmm. because you do assume, you bake into plans that there will be setbacks. And you just have to be clear with your athletes about that. Like, if they have setbacks, that, is that better? Did you guys hear that?
Yeah. The static. That was,
yeah.
Oh, I don't think I hear it.
That was crazy. But anyways, if you, we got to pay attention to that. But if you write a plan for somebody and you're clear with them, like, look, it's not abnormal for you to have some moments where you have to take a day off here. We mm-hmm. have to back off mm-hmm. of a workout. Like, don't panic. Don't like stress that you're not going to be as fit. You're not going to be in shape, because if you enact a plan to 100% to a T, I'm a little worried. You know, you might be almost overtrained, or there might be an injury looming around the corner.
Yeah.
So just kind of know that.
Or then you've miscalculated that athlete and they actually have way more of a threshold.
Yeah.
Shoot. Like, we could have pushed them 10 more.
Well,
like,
great. You know that. And now in the next phase,
yes,
you build up from it, you know? Okay. And then you kind of redline it a little bit. But I think Joe Benoit Samuelson said something along the lines of, like, you know, we would rather end up on the line, you know, struggling with injury and fatigue than to even consider for a moment to be slightly undertrained. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's the psychology of a runner right there. Mm-hmm. Like, just for some reason, we can't even fathom the concept of being like not working our butts off to the absolute nth degree.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, like, the mental side of that too. Like, I had some teammates where they would come in from their warm up before their like race, whether that was like a mile or 800, like, man, that was like the worst warm up I've ever had. Like, I felt like absolute dog shit.
Yeah.
And then they would PR. They would run fast.
Well, the psychology is pretty obvious there, because they felt bad. They had no expectations.
Right. And then,
or they had lowered expectations.
That wall's down and you're just going out there and competing.
Yeah. And they're just like, oh, it's going to kind of suck. Mm-hmm. And like this and that. And then the race starts and they're like, actually, wait a minute. Like, I kind of do feel pretty good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always liken those days to, I mean, I feel like I learned that lesson pretty early in high school, but I likened those days to like getting the cobwebs off, you know, like you're just sometimes on the warm up, you're like, yeah, you're just getting the cobwebs off a little bit, breaking the rust off the bumper a little bit, and then the race starts, and then you're like, all right, here I am. I'm familiar with this feeling now.
Yeah, it's I like one high school athlete that I'm working with. You know, he opened up his indoor season, and he had a big goal, and we were talking. I was like, dude, just go for it. Just go out fast, and whatever happens, happens. And he's like, yeah. And he fell about 10 seconds off of that goal. He wanted to run 4:08, 4:06, and he went 4:16, but his first lap was 58.
Yeah, that feeling.
And it was just like, dude, you're going to put those pieces together, and it's going to come together, and you're going to feel so good once it does.
Yeah.
But just don't doubt yourself. Just because you ran 4:16, you went out in 58, you're fine. You're going to be fine. Trust your talent, trust your training. Like, you're going to hit that. And so I'm excited for him. I hope he gets there.
Yeah. And that's the thing that, like, that's what I kind of appreciate about this, like, younger culture, like right now, like the full send mentality and stuff. Like even little Tommy, my little 5-year-old guy that I'm adopting. Full send, dude.
Haymakers.
I just love, he fell down the stairs last night and he was like, I'm okay. It's like awesome. That's great, dude.
I love the humility of it. Like, my nephew, he'll do laps around the house, and I was timing him one night, and he had to do, like, I think 5 laps. And he comes around after his third one. He's like, Uncle Zach, don't time that one. I tripped and fell in the gopher hole in the back. He's like all like muddied up.
His sock is hanging half off his foot.
Well, the other day they were chasing each other at our house, and we had the dishwasher down, and then Mariah
I already know this.
She just like catapults into the dishwasher. Just tangles herself up with some forks and stuff.
Oh gosh, I thought you were gonna say she just ran into it with her shin.
Well, she did that, and then she ended up in the dishwasher.
How did she respond to that? Did she just get up and shake it off? Well, or was she?
They look upset? At you.
Yeah, and they're waiting for it.
They're waiting to see you panic, and then I literally don't even really acknowledge it, and she just gets up and was like, "I'm okay," and keeps running. But she's like, "Should this hurt?
There's a kitchen.
Should this hurt?"
She's like, like Ace Ventura. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh man, we've had some great movie references.
I know, dude. Yeah. Any other crazy topics you guys feel like we should tackle? These shooting from the hip episodes are fun, man.
Yeah, they're fun. We talk about meth, to talk about training, to
to training psychology, to racing psychology, to
ninjas.
Three ninjas. I think that's the theme of it.
It is. Super Bowl predictions. What are we thinking?
Well, this will come out after the Super Bowl. So if we're right, then we'll look really, really good.
Yeah.
So I said, I think, I like what Tom Brady said. He said that, you know, the year that they lost to the Giants and they were the best team in the league, with Moss, and they were they were going for the perfect record, and they lost. And he's like, I would have bet every money, all the money I had, that we were going to win that game. But he's like, you can't think of it that way. He's like, I learned a big lesson. You have to think of it like, if you play 10 times, who would win 7 out of the 10 times or 6 out of the 10 times? And I think Seattle would win 6 or 7 out of 10 times here. I would not be shocked if New England upsets them. But I think Seattle wins by double digits.
Blowout game.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I'm going to pick Seattle.
So man, I shouldn't say double digits. My technical score is 31-24, but I think they cover, which is 4.5 points.
Who's the Seattle coach right now?
Matt McDonald.
I don't know much about him.
Yeah, he's a hard line, tough defensive guy.
Is he?
Yeah.
Is he a guy that'll stand out in the rain with no rain?
Mm-hmm.
Rain.
Yeah, he's a tough dude.
Oh man.
Yeah, he's a real tough dude.
I do think it's gonna be the Seahawks, but I'm saying Patriots squeak it out by a touchdown or a field goal.
Okay, so you're saying Seahawks will win 7 out of 10 times, but this game you think Patriots going to win?
I just think that I just remember watching the first game of the season when they played the Bengals, and they were talking about Mike Vrabel's first year. this is a rebuild. You know, I think down the line he's going to have the right stuff, and like, he just has that. He's got that grit.
They lost early to Pittsburgh and to the Raiders. And they came out 13-3 and they had those two losses earlier in the year. So since then, they've had the number one offense in the league in terms of yards per game and all that. So it's like, they're definitely not slouches, but I think recency bias of...
I mean, Seattle just looks so good.
Yeah, and they look, they're high-flying, they're fast, they're just aggressive, and like New England played like slugfest games against tough defenses, and the defense they're going to see in Seattle is not going to be any harder than what they already experienced. So I could definitely see an upset. I'll put it this way. I think Seattle would win more times out of 10, but I also think that if you told me there was a blowout, I would bet my bottom dollar that Seattle would blow them out. I can't see New England blowing Seattle out. I think New England would win in a close game. The other thing that you got to consider too is that Josh McDaniels is, you know, this is his 10th Super Bowl. And so Vrabel's, I don't know how many Super Bowls he's been in, but he's been in a couple. And as a player, you know, that front office all the way through from New England all the way down. I mean, all those coaches in front office, I mean, they've been here before.
Mm-hmm.
And Seattle's been to some recent Super Bowls, but only the GM has. That's it. Right.
Yeah. We need Mr. Walsh Jesuit to pull it out.
I know. Dude. Old Vrabel grew up a block down the street from where we're recording this episode. So I am rooting for the Patriots because of that, not because I am a Boston fan, because old Mike Vrabel was from where we're recording the podcast. So. Yeah. Root for your local guy who went to Walsh High School.
I'm going to say 28-17.
Oh, man. That's a doable thing. Our scores might be a little high. I was listening to Gray Cosell talk, and he was saying that he thinks it's going to be a field goal kind of a game. It's going to be a heavy defensive game, that these two defensive coaches, as head coaches, are going to have a lot of schemes, and you know they're just going to kind of slow down the offenses a little bit. And you know, most people are kind of saying it like a 20-10, 20-13 kind of a game.
Yeah. It's going to be the mustard, dude.
Yeah.
I'm just watching for the commercials.
Well, which Super Bowl halftime you guys going to watch?
Oh, the Super Bowl halftime show.
I don't know. Who is it?
It's Bad Bunny, but the alternative is Kid Rock.
Wait, there's an alternative?
Yeah.
I'm 100% going to listen to Kid Rock over. I don't even have any idea who Bad Bunny is. Up until like 2 days ago, I had thought it was a female. So
I'm not even diving into that mess. I'm just watching. I'm keeping on the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Wait, is it not a Super Bowl thing?
So no. What is it? Turning Point?
It's like... Charlie Kirk's platform that his wife took over.
Yeah, I'm not going to get involved in that. I'll just listen to Lynyrd Skynyrd. my favorite commercial, because you know how they now pre-release some of the commercials.
Yeah,
the Bud Light. They're back in the game.
I was talking to this one page. What were you going to say?
Oh, their new commercial is fantastic.
Oh man,
I don't think I've seen it.
Oh, it's the Clydesdale as it was a pony, and it finds a baby bird and like basically like blocks it from getting rained on, and they like fester this friendship. And then the very end of the commercial is like the horse, you know, now being a full Clydesdale and jumping over a log. And as he's jumping in the air, it's a bald eagle and it spreads its wings. So it looks like Pegasus. And the whole time it's Freebird in the background.
The most American thing.
Exactly. And I'm like,
that's hilarious.
Whoever in their marketing program should get paid an extra $1 million for that commercial.
I know. I was talking to a patient about this, and they're like, oh, I'm not watching the Bad Bunny halftime show, because they were very political about it. And I was like, oh, okay. And then they're like, oh, I'd rather watch the Kid Rock one. And I'm like, do you know who Kid Rock is? Like, did you remember Kid Rock from the 90s? This is not the most model citizen ever. Like, just on your drive, she was like 70 years old. And I'm like, just on your drive home, like, play on Ball with the Ball, Bang to Bang on Spotify.
Just some cowboy.
And that's who you're choosing. It's like, come on. Like, these are just like, no one is not more like righteous than the other. Let's be honest here.
Just gonna watch the Super Bowl.
Yeah. All right, guys, thanks for listening to another great episode of the Mind Body Marathon. Any final last points, Zaccaroni?
No, I think I'm good.
All right, peace out till another day. Yeah. See you guys. Dr. Leo here. If you want to catch me in another setting, be sure to check out my YouTube page, Running Rehab, where you will find exercises on how to stay healthy with running, how to improve your running form, and a bunch of other tips and tricks on how to get over common injuries. Dr. Leo here. Be sure to check out my new book, Faster Without Fail, Your Guide to Overcoming Injuries and Running Faster Than Ever. It is now available on Amazon. You could read reviews on the Amazon. You can check out what other people have said about it. But basically, if you want to revolutionize your running form and better understand how to stay injury-free within the sport, this is your guide. Feel free to reach out and let us know what you think of the book. I would love to hear your feedback. But again, please check it out on Amazon. Faster Without Fail. Appreciate it.